Hi all, hope you're doing well. I have been really moved by the readings this week, and I'm excited to share some of that with you all. I decided to take a little different type of reading methodology, I guess I would say, than I normally do with assignments. And I took the reading that we've been working on here the last few days, the past before us, and actually put that into Speechify, which is a fun app. Not fun, I mean, it's very handy, but it's fun. And it allows you to basically kind of make an audiobook out of any text. And I'll do this every now and then with long PDFs, or if I know I'm going to be traveling or something like that. And as someone who's, been, an avid reader their whole life, I love audiobooks, and I process them a lot, but I process them differently than I do written books in some weird way. I'm not sure phenomenologically why that is, but I always like interacting with, the actual text with my hands. But anyway, so I took this and I uploaded it to Speechify, and just kind of read through the, or listened to, I guess, the introduction and the first couple of chapters as I was out and about this week, picking up the kids or starting a fire in the fire pit last night with the kids, or taking kids to basketball practice and over to this play practice and this and that, and trying to get some work done myself. So it was kind of like, while I'm sweeping, I'm going to listen to the past before us and just sort of, let's do the dishes with this on in the background. And then as I was working on the text over the weekend, I decided, I wonder what my five-year-old would think about this, my five-year-old daughter. So we listened to a few snippets that I had highlighted because I thought she might find it interesting, and she gave me some really interesting insight. So then I took it to my eight-year-old, and over the last few days, we've been listening to little snippets in the car on the way to school, or I'm about to go sit in the pickup line, and when he gets in the car, we'll listen to a few more snippets. And I've been really excited about what they've brought to the text for me. So it's not just me in front of this text talking about genealogy, because we talk a lot about that in my family. We're very proud of our, history and been here since the 1700s as colonizing Europeans, but also, our family's other side with our indigenous heritage, my great-grandmother. So my son is very fascinated by all of that, and he looks at her pictures, and he looks at the Bibles we have, from the mid-1800s and early 1800s, and we talk about some of the differences there. So it's fun to see these light bulbs go off in their head as well. And I've got a few of those reflections I wanted to share with you. So that's kind of the preface, and I'm sorry, this is going to be, 8-10 minutes long. I was going to do a video, so be thankful this is just audio, but anyway. And we're back for part two. I'm in the carpool line waiting for my son to come out and say hello. And then I am going to go do some errands. And then he's got running club. And then I'm going to pick him up. But I'm listening to the past before us again. And I just wanted to share some initial thoughts. The transcript is down below of all this, so you don't have to listen to this. You can hear my littlest one coughing in the background. I'm sorry, she's got a little cold. So in engaging with the past before us, I was deeply struck, and my five-year-old as well. And I'm going to attempt this, and my apologies to Kanani and our friends in Hawaii. I was deeply struck by how I'm going to work on that, I promise. Reframes genealogy as an epistemological methodology that is relational, spiritual, and embodied, which is very important for me coming from a theological, phenomenological point of view. This approach resonates strongly as well with the Gullah, who I've been researching this semester, and it's working up to be a major research project for me, might be dissertation material. It resonates strongly with some of the Gullah articulations of cultural practices that we see and are told about. which demonstrates a distinctive form of indigenous articulation through their deep connections to the land and seascapes of the Lowcountry here in South Carolina. Their sovereignty is expressed not through de jure rights, but through de facto assertions of belonging to the land, disrupting traditional dichotomies between historical indignities and diasporic identity. So these traditions, shaped by an environment akin to their West African origins, reflects a relational cosmology that intertwines, I think, kind of this interplay between African and Native American influences with the ecological rhythms of the southeastern United States coast. Our coast here is a wonderful, incredible living, I would say, thing, living entity that we would rightly do well to try to live with and not live on or dominate, if that makes sense from a colonialist point of view. So as Santos points out in the end of the Cognitive Empire, linked down below, dominant Western paradigms have historically dismissed knowledge systems like Hawaiian genealogy, as well as those of the Gullah, whether it's spiritual sides of things or whether it's things like music, and in trying to portray Gullah music, which is very important to me, as something that is you know, weird or foreign or spooky, as you will. So bringing that illegitimacy and sort of a non-scientific, positionality to cultures such as that. However, these knowledge systems challenge the epistemological hierarchies by demonstrating how knowledge production and dissemination are actually concrete forms of power, which Santos speaks about. Both serve as forms of resistance and resurgence by centering on lived experiences, ancestral connections, and the spiritual dimensions of knowledge production. So the Gullah's preservation of cultural practices through spiritual expressions and food ways, which here in South Carolina we benefit greatly from, things like my beloved chicken bog and all sorts of recipes that we have here, go directly back to the Gullah and their food ways, and artistic traditions that mirror the genealogical frameworks of Mo'oaku, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to get it. I've been practicing it for a week. Where knowledge is not static, but an ongoing relational process of remembering and reconnecting, which Dillard talked about in their work. So this insight, back in the carpool line, this insight underscores the broader project of decolonizing knowledge production, I think, which requires not just recognizing alternative epistemologies, but actively dismantling the structure that perpetuate their marginalization of communities like the Gullah or Native Hawaiians, while addressing the legacy of colonization and imperialism within academia as well. Both Mo'oaku and Gullah traditions exemplify how knowledge is produced through lived experience of resistance, cultural preservation, and ecological stewardship, or environmental stewardship, if you will. As Norgard discusses in the book that I'm still processing, Salmon and Acorns Feed Our People, I think we need a whole class just on that. Centering indigenous epistemologies not only disrupts colonial hierarchies, but also illuminates the vital interconnections between ecological health, cultural identity, and social justice. One critical aspect I think we really need to consider, though, is the need to navigate power dynamics thoughtfully when applying methodologies across cultural contexts, and that's something that I'm trying to specifically do in my own research and project with the Gullah. I'm not a person of Gullah descent. We share a geographical context, but that's about it. So me coming into this, I'm trying to be especially sensitive and thoughtful about my work and my research. Wilson Akawitu notes, Mo'oaku is deeply rooted in Hawaiian history and an ontology, and any attempt to draw parallels with other cultural practices must respect the sovereignty of local communities. This requires moving beyond sort of that excavation or extractive type academic practice where, you know, we want to dig down through the layers of civilization and find the ore layer at the beginning of you know, Troy or Nineveh, you know, and discover the pure essence of what this place was. And I think that spirit is very much still alive in academia, and I'm speaking generally there as well. But that requires moving beyond that extractive practice towards approaches that foster reciprocity, relational accountability, ensuring that local communities maintain autonomy and defining their knowledge and how that knowledge is preserved, understood, shared. So my question, after this initial reading and sort of cycling around the book in different parts and just kind of picking up my phone and listening to different parts of the book through Speechify at various points throughout the week and then talking with my children, my question is, how can we as researchers and future scholars responsibly draw from decolonial frameworks like this concept of genealogy in the Hawaiian context to engage with other place-based traditions such as those of the Gullah without conflating distinct cultural experiences or reinforcing existing power dynamics in knowledge production? And again, I think Basso does a good job of this with the Western Navajo and Wisdom Sits in Places, which I know we're not reading here, but that's one of those books that I really resonate with when I'm thinking of that question. So again, how can we draw from Mo'oaku Ahau and things like Gullah traditions or Gullah spirituality or Gullah music that offer a different epistemology without conflating ideas or without, you know, applying or veneering over, you know, very valuable worldviews, and realizing those power dynamics that we all, you know, exist in as a field of power in this world, in what we call knowledge production. And, you know, how does that resonate with what we're trying to describe or talk about or research or digest or whatever we're doing there in that concept of knowledge production? And even that, you know, I think it's kind of a colonizing force. So anyway, but that's kind of my big question through this so far. So in reflecting on those themes, I'm inspired to explore how more about how decolonial methodologies can serve as real tools for both preserving and reimagining cultural and ecological relationships. These frameworks challenge us to think beyond the boundaries of conventional academic disciplines and to consider how knowledge systems grounded in things like ancestral connections might inform a more just and sustainable future. So yes, it's about the past, but that tells us about the future. And we see this throughout cultures that I think stand apart from, I'm going to go out on a limb here, kind of, you know, mainstream United States culture, American culture, if you will, where the past is discussed, but it's not really held in the same regard. And if you ask a lot of young people, they can't tell you who their great-grandparents are, or, you know, let alone something beyond that. And I think that really does a disservice to producing grounded humans who understand their place on the earth, here with the land. And as a, again, a former classroom teacher for almost 20 years, that was one thing I would discuss with my older students, and seniors, juniors in high school, of, you know, hey, what do you know about your family's history? And where are they from? South Carolina? Where did they come from? You know, how does this, what does that look like? And it might shock you to hear how few people, young people, know their history here, kind of in this mainstream cultural milieu we find ourselves in. But I think that's a very interesting point. So anyway, so I'm inspired to explore how these methodologies can help us reimagine that. These frameworks challenge us to think beyond the boundaries of conventional academic disciplines and to consider how knowledge systems grounded in ancestral connections might inform a more just and sustainable future. The living methodologies demonstrated by both Mo'oaku
how Angola traditions show us how knowledge can be preserved and transmitted through lived experiences rather than solely through academic frameworks, offering vital lessons for, I think, a decolonial praxis in contemporary contexts as we do our knowledge production as well. So thank you for listening. The transcript is down below, and this is from Emery Campbell's work, Gullah Cultural Legacies, Cynthia Dillard's work, The Spirit of Our Work, Black Women Teachers Remember, Carrie Norgard's Salmon and Acorns Feed Our People, Santos's The End of the Cognitive Empire, The Coming Age of Epistemologies of the South, and Wilson Hakawatu, The Past Before Us. And I greatly enjoyed it, and I found a little bit of experimenting with how I take in the text does lead to interesting avenues. So thank you for humbling me with listening if you have, and I can't wait to see you all soon.